KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde. Earlier this month, the Seattle City Council approved a new rental housing law that requires property inspections. We're going to find out more details and answer all of your landlord-tenant legal questions. We also want to hear your stories about the worst tenant or landlord you've ever had. Here's what we heard from some of you earlier.
The worst landlord, we had a faucet leaking, and he took string and rubber band and wrapped it around the faucet, so it didn't really work.
A slumlord rented to college students. We were living five in an apartment. I was sleeping on the living room floor. And even before we moved in, he announced no matter what we did in terms of leaving that apartment, we were not getting our cleaning deposit back.
And the next guy we rented it to, he had plastic all over the upstairs. He was growing marijuana upstairs, and he was printing money, apparently, in the basement. So he was a pretty enterprising young man.
If you've got questions, if you've got stories like that, give us a call now, 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869, or email us. The email address here is conversation@kuow.org. And landlord-tenant lawyer Evan Leffler is with us. He represents both tenants and landlords. Evan Leffler, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to, before we get to some of these stories in a minute, I want to jump into this new program in Seattle that's going to require the registration for all rental properties and also inspection of all rental properties, as far as I understand it. So in a nutshell, I mean, it's new, it's still being debated, but what's the basics? What's in this new law?
Well, the basics are that landlords of residential property in Seattle have until about 2 years before they have to start registering with the city and have somebody give them a certificate of compliance that the apartment is in good shape and habitable. And it really doesn't begin until January 2014, and then that you don't have to be all registered until December of 2016. And then once you get certified as a landlord, you have 5 years before you have to have that again.
If you've got questions, give us a call, 206-543-5869. We're talking to Evan Leffler, not just about this new Seattle law, but also any of your questions about the legal issues surrounding tenants and landlords. If you've got a worst tenant or landlord story, 206-543-5869. So from the perspective of tenants' rights advocates, what's the benefit of this new law?
For tenants? Well, it's good for tenants in that it will, or it should, ensure better housing in Seattle for tenants, that landlords will have to display a certificate that shows that they're in compliance, and it gives tenants something that they can point to if the landlord is not doing what he's supposed to do. For landlords, it is good as well in that they have something that shows that they're in compliance with the law, and it also, for landlords that pride themselves on keeping up with these things, that it will distinguish themselves from those that who do not, the people who are scofflaws.
One of the issues I know that came up when this was being discussed, and it was sort of went through various iterations as I remember it, but was just who's going to end up paying for the inspections? Does the city pay for that? Do the landlords pay for that? Do the tenants pay for that?
Well, that remains to be seen. I suspect that most of the money to pay for that is going to come from landlords, and that the compliance fee requires a registration. And the amount that they have to pay for registration, to my knowledge, has not been set yet. The statute, or rather the ordinance, was just signed into law October 9, and it states that that will be determined later, as will a methodology for getting all of the units inspected. There are many, many thousands of apartment units, and it's a very finite amount of resources on behalf of the city to get them inspected. So they'll have to figure that out and add to the ordinance as time goes on.
All right. So that's what we've learned today, a little bit about this new Seattle law requiring inspections and registrations for rental properties in the city. If you want to find out more, you can check it out on our website. That's at kuow.org. But we're talking to landlord-tenant lawyer Evan Leffler. And if you've got questions for him, the number to call is 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869, or you can email us. The email address here is conversation@kuow.org. And I want to go to a call, if we can, here. Right now, oops, we actually lost that caller, but we're going to go to a different one. It looks like that person hung up. We got Corey calling us from the U District. Corey, what's your question?
Hi, David. This is Corey. I am one of the 10 leaders who've worked on getting this rental housing inspection program passed, and I just wanted to share a bit of my story. My story was that I moved into an illegal unit in the U District here and found out later on that it was an illegal unit, but during the course of living there, the apartment flooded full of gray water because somebody was flushing baby wipes down the toilet. And my landlord failed to adequately clean it up. It turned into a moldy, disgusting mess. I had to get a mold inspector to come in who tested it and found out that it was actually Stachybotrys black mold that was growing in there, which is a really dangerous mold. My point, though, is that I wanted to make is that because I didn't know that the city had a complaint-based system, I didn't even know that I had recourse in getting out of there.
So Corey, do you have a question for Evan Loeffler?
No, actually, I just wanted to make the point that this is a good system.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Evan, do you have any follow-up to that?
I do. That there has the Seattle Department of Planning and Development is actually a pretty good agency within the city of Seattle, and I've sent a lot of tenants there when they felt that there was an illegal unit or a landlord that wasn't complying with local laws. And they tend to pretty quickly come out and inspect and contact landlords if they are not in compliance. And that's a good resource for tenants who maybe they don't want to involve a lawyer or incur the expense of a lawyer. And you may be able to find a link for that on your website. I send people to it by just saying do a Google search on Seattle DPD. And there is a link on that website for reporting landlords.
All right. And we're talking about landlord-tenant law issues that you might have had with a landlord and a tenant or a tenant in the past, including your stories about the worst tenant or landlord that you ever had. And I got this one earlier, somebody saying, my landlord asked me out. What do I do?
Well, sometimes landlords will make it clear that they want the tenant to leave. And I mean, the landlord cannot force a tenant to leave on very short notice.
No, asked me out, like on a date.
Oh, asked you out on a date.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, if you don't want to go out on a date with the landlord, then tell him or her no.
I think the concern that the emailer has is about retaliation. Do you have any recourse if a landlord seems to be, has a certain sort of power over you? I mean, what's your sort of legal recourse in that situation, or what do you recommend?
Well, I would treat it in a similar manner as I would as if your boss asked you out in the workplace, that you cannot be retaliated against for that either, although it's not quite the same thing. In Seattle, if you're a month-to-month residential tenant, you can't be required to leave unless there are just cause as defined by the Seattle Municipal Code, and not going out with me is not considered a just cause. If you're outside the city of Seattle, like let's say you live in Bellevue or Redmond, and the landlord says, I'm giving you notice that you have to leave, and if you believe that this is for an improper purpose, you can make an issue of it. But unless the tenant has actually turned in the landlord or exercised its rights, then it is presumed to be okay there. But you can look under the Residential Landlord Tenant Act under 59.18.240 and 250 for what constitutes unlawful retaliation.
I see. Okay. All right. We're talking about landlord-tenant issues, landlord-tenant law with Evan Loeffler. And if you've got questions, give us a call, 206-543-5869. We've got Lamont calling us right now from Bremerton. Lamont, what's your question?
Oh, I had a comment about a bad tenant. It was a young lady, when she would take a bath, she would shave her legs. She put a foot up on the faucet up until it finally broke, and the pipe inside the wall just flooded inside the wall and the floor, and they didn't tell me. And because the bathtub was next to the exterior wall, her husband thought the actual good way to fix it was to go outside, take off the siding off the house and the moisture barrier, try to get to the pipes and then put it all back up incorrectly. And I didn't know anything about it until they moved out.
Oh, wow. So they didn't tell you about all this flooding?
All the floor and messed up the exterior wall.
All right. Lamont, do you have a question?
My question is, when tenants do property damage to your house during the tenancy period, and it's clearly their fault. What is the landlord's recourse rather than having to try to wait until they move out and take out a security deposit, especially when damage like that far exceeds what the security deposit will cover?
Well, it's a good question. At the beginning of a residential tenancy, most landlords ask the tenant to document the condition of the property. And in fact, it is a requirement under the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act if you're taking a damage deposit. Also, most residential leases state that tenants are supposed to report damage and they are not to make any alterations, which would include repairs, without telling the landlord about it. So what you're describing, assuming you have a written lease, are multiple violations. If you learn about violations along these lines, you can give the tenant an opportunity to correct the violation by fixing it themselves, or maybe you fix it and ask them to reimburse you for the cost. And if they don't rectify the situation, then you can terminate their tenancy. We use what's called a 10-day notice to comply or vacate for that.
All right, Lamont, does that help?
Yeah, but it's really bad when you take a $1,000 deposit and a person does $5,000 or $6,000, because quite often it's hard to get money back from tenants after they leave.
Got it.
Go on a small claims court, you can get a judgment, and you'll win your case, go back for a judgment, and then still never get paid by the tenant.
All right, Lamont, thanks so much for that phone call. Yeah, how about that? If tenants do more than the damage is a lot more than the actual deposit.
Well, as Lamont described, that you can pursue the tenant in either small claims court or get a lawyer and go to district court or superior court for a judgment for the damages that they caused. If the landlord was conscientious, got a statement of what the condition was like at the beginning of the tenancy, and you look at what the condition was like at the end of the tenancy, you can hold the tenant liable for that difference minus reasonable wear and tear, which is going to be decided by a judge. Once you get a judgment, you have a number of ways that you can collect the judgment, but the tenant has to be around. The tenant has to have assets that you can attach as a landlord.
What remedies does a tenant have if a landlord refuses to make a repair that needs to get made, or, I mean, in a similar situation, refuses to refund the full deposit? There's obviously different remedies for both, but still.
Well, I'll talk about the first one first, which is that the same way that a landlord has to give a tenant some form of pre-eviction notice before taking an action against the tenant who isn't doing something under the lease, the tenant is supposed to give notice of some sort to the landlord, and it should be in writing. And depending on the nature of what the landlord isn't doing, like if it's a problem having to do with heat or hot water, the landlord has 24 hours to start making repairs, and more time as it's less and less important. And if the landlord doesn't do that, there are, under the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, several remedies available, including breaking the lease and moving out, making the repair yourself, and deducting the cost of the repair from the rent, up to 1 month's rent. And taking the landlord to court and asking a judge to determine what is the rental value of the house with this defect that the landlord won't fix.
Let's say it's a serious problem with mold. It's quite expensive. It's more than the cost of 1 month rent. What's the recourse? I mean, I think it goes back to this question of retaliation as well. I mean, what recourse does a tenant have if the landlord is basically kind of dragging their feet on those repairs?
Well, if they're very serious and mold isn't always, but it certainly can get to the point of being a health hazard, that the tenants can move, or there is even a statute, which I see used very, very seldom, where you can have a city inspector come out and have the property red tagged, which means the place is found to be uninhabitable. And when that happens, the tenant can pay the rent into an escrow, and the landlord doesn't get the rent until he can show that he's fixed it.
How much will this new Seattle law prevent those kinds of problems from emerging in the first place, do you think?
I'm thinking it will decrease it to a certain extent, except it's a 5-year inspection period. And, I mean, really, if a landlord does the bare minimum to get an inspection and then doesn't do any repairs at all during the next 5 years, either because they're lazy or they don't have the money to do so, I mean, there'll still be complaints for certain.
We're talking to lawyer Evan Leffler about landlord-tenant law here in Seattle. If you've got questions, 206-543-5869 is the number to call. You can also call us toll-free, 1-800-289-5869. We've got Savannah calling us from Queen Anne.
Hi, I have a question regarding my landlord. So one of my roommates decided that they wanted to move out, and he let her off the lease, gave her her security deposit back, but then made me pay her rent and her utilities for the next, well, I'm still paying them right now, and said that he'd evict us if we didn't pay her rent and would not let anyone else move in the room.
All right, Savannah.
I have any legal recourse.
Got it. And I'm gonna let you go because it was a little hard to hear. Did you get that one, Evan?
I think I got it.
Okay, great. Thanks.
What I understand is that you have two roommates, and one of the roommates moved out, and the landlord is looking to the remaining roommate to pay the entire amount of rent. Generally speaking, and what we do is we look at the actual terms of the lease. You have one lease with one tenant, which comprises two people, and so if one of those people moves out, the roommates may have an ability to look to each other for assistance, but the landlord agreed to rent the space for a certain amount of rent, and the person who's there is going to be responsible to pay the entire amount of rent. Now, if the landlord put in writing, "I'm releasing one roommate," he's made a change to the tenancy without the permission of all of the parties who are part of that contract, part of the lease. And so it could be more complicated than that. I would tell Savannah to get a copy of the lease and go and speak to a lawyer who can review the lease and give better or more thorough advice than what I'm able to do with a limited time today.
All right. And I've just got a couple minutes left here, but I wanted to ask about deposits. How quickly does a landlord need to return a deposit? And what do you do if they don't?
Well, that's good. And that goes back to one of the questions that was asked earlier. Sometimes landlords don't return deposits. The rule in Washington is that when a tenant vacates, starting with when the landlord knows or should have known that the tenant is no longer there, there's a 14-day clock. And within those 14 days, the landlord needs to put in the mail an accounting for the damage deposit. So that doesn't mean you have to return the entire damage deposit. It doesn't mean that the accounting has to be entirely complete, but you got to at least acknowledge, "I have the deposit, and maybe there are like $300 worth of cleaning, and here's an invoice, and there's still some things that need to be repaired, and I'll get you invoices as soon as possible, and that's why I'm withholding a certain amount of the deposit." The landlord who takes no action or doesn't put anything in writing and send it to the tenant within 14 days loses the right to hold on to the deposit, which does not mean that the tenant isn't responsible for the damages. It means that he can't hold on to the deposit while they argue about who's responsible for what.
Got it. All right. Evan Loeffler, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Evan Loeffler is a landlord-tenant lawyer. And earlier we were talking about this new program in Seattle that's going to require registration and inspections of all rental properties in the city. And if you want to find out more about that, there's a link up on our website at kuow.org. Leslie McClurg produced today's program with Molly Williams. Andy Hurst is your engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.